Let's go to the next passage. This is 2 Timothy 2, verses 11 through 13. There's a lot of very, very obvious parallel structures here, and very, very beautifully laid out. You really hear the poetry, the repetitions within repetitions here. This saying is sure. If we have died with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, then he will be faithless to us. Ooh, that's what you're expecting, right? But that's not what it said. Notice how the last one catches you by surprise. And again, that's why I say, when you see the difference, pay attention. Pay attention to what changes. Because what you're expecting in the last verse is, if we are faithless, then he will be faithless. But no, he can never be faithless. If we are faithless, God will still remain faithful because he has sworn an oath, a covenant. And to break his promise of fidelity would be to deny himself. Now, that's profound. Now, if you want to say, you know, an eye for an eye and all this, you say, okay, how we treat God is how he will treat us. Not quite, because God's ways are not our ways. And this is that's really one of the greatest things we might see. That's where I think, like Psalm 117, we said, extols the Lord's gracious love and his faithfulness and his mercy. This is one of the things that we see in the scriptures. This is what makes God different from us, is that so often we tend to give as we have received, and it might be more commonplace for fallen humanity to behave in that sort of way. Well, I'll do to you as you have done to me. But it's not the way God behaves, and that's what's so amazing about his enduring love and his relationship with us. So, parallel structures with a surprise at the end. So, and that surprise really gives us some great insight there. Let's look at the next passage, Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9. One of the things you'll notice now as we've been kind of going along, you notice how the passages have been getting longer? And we're also looking now not quite so much at just one individual verse. We're starting to look at patterns within larger passages. We're going to keep doing that. The passages are going to keep getting bigger and bigger. We started with the small ones to get used to the terms, but now we're going to start getting bigger and bigger as we go through. Now, here, can you give me some examples of some things that go together? Okay, this is one of the tools in seeing structure, is you can say this part goes with this part. As you read through this passage, go ahead and take a moment to read through it, and then I'll ask you, can you see parts that clearly fit together? Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your head. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead. Or as a sign on your hand and as an emblem on your forehead, write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Can you give me like two line chunks that go together? Things that obviously kind of fit together? Just any one you want to call out. It can be anywhere in the passage. Okay. A lot of this is pretty straightforward. I know it's pretty obvious, you know, a lot of these things. So give me two lines that obviously kind of fit together. Because they use the same type of language or the same type of vocabulary, yeah.
5 and 7.
Okay. 5 and 7. Let me take not so much an entire verse at a time, but just those individual strophes. Yeah, it's actually really, really simple. Just individual lines. For example, talk about them when you are at home goes with the next line, and when you're away. Okay. What does that mean to say, I want you to do this while you're home, and I want you to do this while you're away? That means always, okay? That's a technique in Scripture. I'm going to give you another word here. It's called a merism. It's M-E-R-I-S-M, a merism. And what that is when you say from the rising of the sun to the setting of the sun. Okay, that means you say this and you say that, and you encompass everything. It's a poetic way of saying do this all the time. This passage would be a lot shorter if they just said, okay, love God and do it all the time. But it doesn't do that. It gives you these wonderfully poetic merisms to give you the sense of the comprehensiveness of what we are to do. So in this merism, when you see, like, from the rising to the setting of the sun, that does not mean from 7:02 a.m. until 6:53 p.m. Okay, we're not, you know, like you're running the atomic clock and you're saying, okay, sunrise and sunset are at these times. No, it's not that literal. it just has that sense of the totality of what we do. Give me another merism that's in there, maybe in that sort of last section in there. We did when you're home and when you're away. Give me another one that's parallel like that. Yeah. When you lie down and when you rise. In other words, always. So whether you're resting or whether you're rising. What other things can we kind of put together in these sort of little two-line chunks? Yeah.
But
that's right. Bind them as a sign on your hand and fix them as an emblem on your forehead. If you have something on your hand and something on your forehead, what does that mean? That means in everything that you do, okay, you think of the hand as the so what do you do? It's in the work that you do, and on your forehead is a sign of your mind. So in what you do and in what you think, in your thoughts and your words and what you've done and what you failed to do. I mean, you remember we say that in the Confiteor all the time. So that's a great one. And the next one you also went on to say, write them at the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Okay, so you get this sort of comprehensive notion that these are to be in every part of your house. So you, again, another sort of merism. Verses 6 and 7a, I guess we could call that. Keep these words that I'm commanding you today in your heart, and teach them to your children. Okay, I even think those go together. So you're to keep them, and you're to pass them on. So that even that, I think, works together. What about at the beginning? Hear, O Israel, and then look at these next lines. The Lord is our God, the Lord alone. Okay, that's just in Hebrew, that comes out with a real kind of powerful. The Lord is our God, the Lord alone. It's just got a real tight cadence to it right there. I think those two go together. And if I was going to put the next part together, you shall love the Lord your God. Here comes a triple, right? This next one's really a triple, isn't it? With all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. So I would put those together as a block. Okay. So you see how we're just kind of finding these patterns in here? It's nothing too complicated, but we're just sort of seeing what's there. You get the declaration that the Lord is God. Therefore, here's what you're supposed to do about it. You're supposed to love him, and here's how. And how are you supposed to love him? When? At all these times. And notice how you get merism after merism after merism after merism. So it really, at all times, in all places, in all activities, in all actions, in what you do and in what you think, at all times, in every single way, you are to take to heart this commandment. Hear. Hear, O Israel. So just a great, great little passage that's there. The next one, Psalm 1. This is one where there's probably a lot that could be said about this, and we're just going to scratch the surface of this psalm. But that's okay. It's something that you could continue to look at and take to heart to consider later. What we're going to see here are lots of contrasts between the people who are good and the people who are wicked. So those who walk in the way of the Lord, those who do not, those who are wicked. And so let's just look at some of these passages here. So we start off, happy are those who don't do these things. How many things does the righteous person not do? He doesn't follow the advice of the wicked. He doesn't take the path that the sinners tread. He doesn't sit in the seat of the scoffers. Now, even those three things kind of have a comprehensive nature to it. So they don't listen to the advice, they don't follow in the path, and they don't sit, they don't rest in the seat of the scoffers. So it even has this notion of your thoughts, in your actions, and even in your resting, even where you land. So it's just sort of another comprehensive sense that they don't do any of these things. The wicked, the sinners, and the scoffers, those all three are in parallel, right? Because those are the three things you avoid. But what do they do? Their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law they meditate day and night. What's day and night? That's a merism. That's another merism. There you are. Okay, so at all times, day and night. So here's what they do focus on. They delight in the law of the Lord. Now we get an image. Now notice in verse 3, they are like trees. And now you're going to get this image of the trees. First we had a specific description. Here's what they don't do, and here's what they do. Verse 3, notice we're doing something a little different. They're like this, and now we're going to give you an image. What are they like? They're like trees planted by streams of water, which yield their fruit in due season. Their leaves do not wither, and in all that they do, they prosper. Notice how overflowing that description is. Each line just adds to the mental picture in your mind. As you're saying, they're like a tree. Okay, you have an image in your mind. Planted by a stream of water. Now the image gets a little richer. And he says, that yields fruit in due season. And so with each step, you're getting this mental image of the bounty. It's just bounty overflowing on bounty as you see this living, and it's just such a green image in your mind, isn't it? It just has this image of being alive, being filled with life and goodness. The wicked are not so. Now, how much of a description do they get? Do they get an overflowing description, adding mental image to mental image? No, they just get one little line. They are like the chaff that the wind drives away. Notice you take the time to describe the good thing, but the wicked, you just dismiss them with the breath. You just blow them away. It's just like chaff, and it just flies away. They're gone. Not even to be pondered. So even that, I think that, you know, the spending the time on the one and not spending the time on the other, didn't we notice that just a little bit ago, that you take the time to describe the thing you want to emulate, but you dispatch with the thing that's the woe relatively quickly. So I think that emerges in Scripture probably more often than we might realize. Therefore, the word therefore sort of draws us out. We're done with the image, and now we're kind of coming back to a conclusion. So the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. Okay? Notice in each case we've had a contrast. We either said this is what the good person's like, this is what the good person doesn't do, this is what the good person does do. This is what the good person's like, this is what the wicked person is like. And now we get, here's what the wicked do, and then we're going to get what their reward is. The wicked will not stand. The wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked perishes. So a real sense of poetry that's there. We've really just scratched the surface with that psalm. I mean, it's something that you can kind of ponder and consider as you sort of look at the patterns within all of those things, see different connections. So that could be something that could be prayed over and then even applied in our lives, because we could start thinking about the ways in which following the will of God is life-giving, and the ways in which sin is really life-draining. So we can see some of those things and probably even reflect on them a little bit just in our lives.